I'm Liz Seeger. I'm here with Martha Pollack, Manhattan District Director for JASA, and Donna Dougherty, Attorney in Charge of Legal Services for the Elderly in Queens. Both are part of a vital initiative for older adults called Project LEAP, a joint legal and social work program which uses interdisciplinary teams to combat elder abuse. Thank you for joining Health Styles today.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
Thank you.
Elder abuse isn't a very pretty subject, but it affects more people than most of us realize. Donna, you helped develop Project LEAP. What is it and why is it necessary?
So Project LEAP, as you said in the beginning, is a joint interdisciplinary project of lawyers and social workers at JASA who are experts in how to intervene, prevent, and reach out to people to learn about elder abuse in its many varieties. So the reason why we developed LEAP is because we realized, both the social workers at JASA and the lawyers, that individually we were seeing elder abuse victims, but for one reason or another, we were not able to have those individuals get the services they needed in the time they needed it. And so we thought that by coming together, we may be able to have a better impact for our clients and their families and to really stop the abuse that was going on with our clients. And what we found is that in the first 6 months we did the project, where before we were doing one or two cases, I was going into family court to get an order of protection, that when the social work supports were there, that we were able to do 70 orders of protection. And what that very clearly showed was that with the supports, it empowered the client to take steps they normally would not have taken without those social supports.
So are we talking primarily physical abuse, or are there other kinds of abuse that are involved in this?
We see abuse across a whole range and a whole spectrum. So we do see physical and verbal abuse, financial abuse, emotional abuse. We see neglect, active neglect, where somebody steals medicines that the individual needs and neglects them so that they're at risk. I don't know, Martha, what else do we see?
Abandonment and also sexual abuse.
And sexual.
So there are six types.
How pervasive is this problem in New York?
Well, it's funny. We were just looking at statistics. There is a study that was done in 2011 under the radar New York State Elder Abuse Prevention Prevalence Study that was done by the New York City Department for the Aging, Weill Cornell Center of Cornell University, Lifespan in Rochester. And according to their statistics, the most common form of abuse is financial abuse. The other common form, and what we find really underlies any kind of abuse, is psychological abuse, because no matter what is happening, the person is being affected psychologically. 76 out of every 1,000 older adults are victims of abuse. 9% of all New York City residents ages 60 and above are victims of elder abuse. And an estimated 260,000 older adults statewide have been victims of at least one form of elder abuse in the past year. The problem is it's so underreported that we have no idea. You know, this just gives you a ballpark.
Right.
One of the things that the study showed and was really eye-opening for even those who had been in the field for a long time was that for every one person that comes forward to report abuse, 24 go unreported. And that statistics, even the advocates and the experts thought it was 1 in 8. And when this study came out in New York State, we realized it was much higher than even we thought.
And the other issue, of course, is that when we're not even touching populations where English is not the first language in terms of immigrant populations. So again, you know, there hasn't been a lot of work done. I mean, we have lots of agencies now that represent these populations, and there's more and more work being done collaboratively because we have some of the skills that they need in terms of how do you train them, how do you provide counseling, orders of protection, all these kinds of services, while they have the connections to those clients.
When you talk about psychological and emotional abuse, I think most of us can picture physical abuse, and that's a problem across all ages. But the older population seems to be especially prone to some of these other types of abuse. How do you learn about some of this? How do you go about finding the cases to work on?
Well, most of the cases that we see in the legal department actually come through social work. So what we find is that the client is more comfortable reaching out to a social worker, and it may have started out that the social worker was asking them about maybe some services they needed. Maybe there was somebody else had referred it and suspected abuse, and the social worker goes out and tries to engage the client. And then from that, we learn that there's been really a whole range of abuse going on, and the social worker will then say, do you mind if we bring in a lawyer? You know, it's a step-by-step process, but normally it's coming through, they're not walking into family court, they're not walking into criminal court and saying, or even walking into my office and saying, I'm being abused, can you stop it? They are actually not even reporting that. Somehow they're being engaged by a social worker who knows how to counsel that individual.
If I could talk about some of the entry points, the Family Justice Center, which now is in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Bronx, they're working on one in Staten Island and there's one in Queens. So they have a full array of services for victims of domestic violence, and JASA and Hebrew Home and Manhattan Carter Burton, there's always an elder abuse agency that's there so that the clients are triaged to us. Any case management agency that's funded by the New York City Department for the Aging in the five boroughs, part of their assessment, they have there's a screening tool to assess if someone might have been the victim of elder abuse. Clients can call 311, and that will be directed to the Department for the Aging, which has information and referral. They also have an elderly victim's crime unit. It can come through the police, because mm-hmm. the police may be called into a situation. And there's a tremendous collaboration now going on between the police and these community-based agencies. Adult Protective Services may be alerted to a case. And what's specific about the services that we provide at LEAP, both legal and social work, is our clients can self-direct. Okay. And they have to be involved in every step of the process. If they disagree with the recommendation that we make, even though it's they put them at risk, we have to respect that. So that's a difference. But sometimes we do work with Adult Protective Services on those cases. Through home care, I mean, an aide may witness a physical attack by a family member or a neighbor on a client, or financial exploitation. They may see that money is being seized. But then there are a lot of community gatekeepers. There are bank tellers who may have known this client for a long time, and all of a sudden this person is being escorted by someone to go to the ATM to take that money. I mean, it could be huge, like sending running over a deed. You know, there are all these community people, clergy, who may be aware of changes going on. When we did a training up in Poughkeepsie, we did a gatekeeper training, and there was a librarian who saw an older woman come in with her son, and the son was screaming at her, and took her outside, and this fellow went out to follow them and call the police. So if people are educated about it, it helps tremendously to identify situations for people. A neighbor, you know, there are so many different entree points.
And that's why one of our focuses is education, outreach, and training, because the more people that know about these services, the more people that know what to look for and what to do when they suspect it. Because I think people may in the past have suspected that something was going on with their neighbor, but didn't know what to do and didn't feel comfortable confronting that individual and didn't want to do the wrong thing. So the more we can let people know there are these entryways and services available, and all we are asking is that they report it.
Right. And it's true for hospitals too. If someone comes into the ER with an injury that doesn't look like someone just fell out of bed, you know, here too, you have another way of you know, checking that person out to see
There's mandatory reporting for children. Is there mandatory reporting for seniors?
No, there is not mandatory reporting for seniors per se. There is mandatory reporting if an adult protective service worker witnesses abuse of an older adult or anyone 18 and older. I mean, they have mandatory reporting to the police. That is it in New York. There of course have been discussions about strengthening some laws, and there have been some laws strengthened about vulnerable elderly if you are a vulnerable person in the criminal courts. I'm not a district attorney, they could tell you that, but I do know that over the years they've tried to strengthen that so that they could work some of these elder abuse cases through what is known as a vulnerable adult.
In some states, it is mandatory, but in New York, it's not.
Okay. We've got a huge problem with more elderly suffering from dementia and Alzheimer's. And from the statistics I've seen and from some of the other work I've read, that seems to be a specific target for financial fraud in particular, as well as the emotional abuse. Caregivers just get tired and fed up and maybe do something they don't intend to do. How do you deal with a person that may not be cognitively intact?
Well, if as Martha said, for our representation, both for the lawyer and the social worker, we have to have someone who's able to direct us and let us know what they want us to do for them. So if someone is incapacitated to the point that they cannot direct, we would refer them to other JASA services. JASA has an adult protective services. It has a community guardian. We would certainly stabilize the situation. We would also may work with law enforcement, the district attorney's office. We would certainly work out a case plan for that individual. But they would not, we could not represent them per se. We would take the steps to protect them first, to make sure the abuse is stopped, and then get them to the right agency.
Yeah, just to clarify, you have to go through the city HRA APS referral process, and then they in turn have a choice of community vendors that provide adult protective services. We have APS in Queens, where we have our programs in Manhattan. And the community guardian program would go through APS because the guardianship is a process that takes quite a while.
And I will say on the legal side, if we have someone who's incapacitated, maybe having memory issues, we have on occasion worked with the Adult Protective Service Agency, with community guardians, with what are called Article 81 guardians, which have been appointed by Supreme Court, to get property back that has been stolen. So we have been able through our program to assist them, because that's very hard to do if a deed has been stolen and the person has a guardian. The guardian may not be able to take the legal steps necessary to get the property back. So we have been able to assist in those cases.
Is there any such thing as a typical abuser?
It goes across the board. We keep those statistics. Martha probably has them all in her head. But we see, you know, all from every across the board.
And from every economic group, from every ethnicity. It isn't only family members. It can be a home care worker. You know, sometimes a younger stranger will befriend an old person who seems vulnerable. Oh, they dropped something in the supermarket. The person helps them bring it up here. Look, let me take you home. Let me help you. You know, there are people who kind of befriend an older person. Mm-hmm. There are all kinds of phone and financial scams that we hear about all the time on the internet, on the phone. Again, home care workers, male, female. It's a mix. And even in terms of the victims, I mean, there are more women who are victims of elder abuse, but remember, women live longer, mm-hmm. so there are more older women, you know, around. but it's not one type or, you know, or one person that you see.
And we see people with addiction problems. Some of the abusers have addiction problems. Absolutely. Some have mental health issues in there, and they're not being cared for, so they may be violent. But then there's just, as Martha says, there's just the new best friend who appears on someone's doorstep, realizes the senior is isolated, and cuts them off from whatever remaining social contact they have and starts abusing them.
Yeah, and also a lot of it happens frequently, many, many times with home care workers. The home care worker may be a private pay worker, it may not be through, you know, a Medicaid agency. The home care worker moves in, brings a family member along sometimes. Mm-hmm. The older person is giving them gifts, could be a car. You know, I mean, it's a very slippery slope.
It is, and yet it seems to be very difficult for many people to even acknowledge that this goes on. How do you spread the word, and how do you reach out, for example, to other family members to say, you need to learn about this because we think your mother or your father might be at risk?
Well, it's very, and you have to be very careful because of confidentiality. If you have a client who has family, and you want the family to know what's going on, the client may not want you to do that. So we're really restricted by what the client is willing to let us do. If the client is more receptive and you can get family involved, then that's better because they can support the client. They may call the police. Mm-hmm. They may, you know, take the steps that are necessary that the older person may not want. But if it's a person, if it's an older person, it's a child that's abusing them who may be living with them, they're often very reluctant to report it. They feel guilty. They don't want the person to get into trouble. This may be a long-standing history, and they're kind of, even though it's not proper and right for them to be in these situations and to be psychologically and emotionally abused, but they don't want to get the person in trouble, and they don't understand that there are alternatives.
So a lot of this goes back to what you were saying before about educating the community workers, educating other people in the community to be on the lookout for this.
Right. Yes.
So if somebody needs the services from the LEAP program, can you walk me through the process of what happens when you get notified that there's somebody who needs help?
There are many ways that we get people. Again, police officer who we have relationships with the DBOs, Nicole, community worker here. We have the JASCA Help Center, which is an information referral line that will also take calls and refer people to us. But however it is, the intake worker will get the information. It may come electronically. We're connected through the Department through the Aging for the Aging with STARS, which is a web-based database that's used statewide. So we can get referrals that way through the Department for the Aging, from other DFDA-funded programs like case management or a caregiver mm-hmm. program. So the case comes in, and the social worker will call the client. And hopefully the client will agree to either coming to our office for an interview, or we do a lot of home visits because many of our clients are isolated and homebound. And if they feel it's safe, the worker can go out to meet with them. If the client doesn't feel safe at home but is ambulatory, sometimes we can go to a coffee shop or a library or someplace that's kind of a neutral place, and they'll do an initial intake. And that intake actually takes quite a while because there's a lot of information, and people are sometimes reluctant to really talk at first about what's going on. So they may give you some information, but really not as much, not giving you a full picture of what's going on. So a very important piece is just developing a relationship. And then as the client reveals more, the social worker immediately does a safety plan with them. I mean, that's like the first thing they do, is to develop a safety plan based on what the client tells them to do. They're afraid of, what their vulnerabilities are. And that safety plan is reviewed constantly. And then the social worker, besides doing the counseling, will see what services need to be in place to assist the client to either have the person who may be living with them evicted, or have the home care worker to notify the agency that there's a problem, to have that person changed. if the bank should be alerted that this money is going out so they can put a hold on the account. They may have to report the case to the DA's office if there's any kind of criminal activity, including physical assault. It has to go to the DA's office. So then the process keeps rolling along. So there's continuing counseling, continuing safety planning, the concrete information of referral, getting the benefits and entitlements, and then we also have support groups, which are for the older victim, and they're very successful because you have people who have been through the process and have come to terms with it. They had to get help and have gone through the help process, encouraging those who are just starting the process to take stock of what needs to be done and empowering them to take the steps necessary. And the work continues. We have some clients that we've had for many years. One, because the clients feel that they still need our services, and sometimes the abuser comes back. The client may get an order of protection and then decide, an exclusive order of protection, then decide, oh, I'm going to let my son back in. And then once the son or the daughter comes back in, the problem starts all over. And it takes a long time sometimes for these cases to resolve. And I'm sure they're making it.
Yes, no. So from the legal standpoint, we either the same thing. We'll get an email or a phone call. The social worker at JASA will pick up the phone and say, I just met with Mrs. So-and-so, can you reach out to them? She needs an order of protection, and we'll meet with them either in their home, at the Family Justice Center, here, wherever they feel safe. So the idea is for them to feel safe and comfortable. Sometimes this is the first time they've met with a lawyer. They never, thought they'd ever have to walk into a courthouse to get protection from their family member. We meet with them usually for longer than we meet with other clients because it just takes, as Martha says, you want to build up trust and you want to build up a relationship. And then we'll go through the order of protection with them and we will, we'll explain the process. And, those petitions are filed and we're either working with it. If it's a criminal court, we may be sending someone in to support them, but it's the DA and we're the liaison with the district attorney. Or if it's in family court, we send in our attorneys. And still, even with all of this, generally about 50% of the time, the client will drop the order. So they won't see it through. And what we then do is say, that's fine. Let's just figure out, make sure you have a safety plan still. We're still here if you need us. Mm-hmm. And we may send them back to the social worker for counseling. And maybe they just need some more counseling. Maybe they need some other services. And then often a year from now, 6 months from now, they'll come back to us and we'll redo it. The idea is to always be there. The idea is they shouldn't feel bad that they dropped. I mean, it may not have been in their best interest. We would certainly, we speak to our clients about why we think they need it. We talk to them about creative ways to resolve the abuse. But ultimately, if they want us not to proceed in the court, we'll stop. And we'll make sure that they just continue with our other services. And so it's this constant back and forth between the two professions, the legal and social.
Another a wonderful piece is now in Queens and Brooklyn, there are homebound orders of protection in the Bronx where this is all done electronically and the social worker and the lawyer can be with the client, set at the time, and this way the person doesn't have to be in court, which can be a trauma. I mean, sometimes the wait is so long, even at times certain now, where in the court they'll arrange a certain time. But I know in Staten Island there's a huge flight of stairs, and a disabled person is going to have difficulty getting there. Someone's diabetic and they need to eat and they have to wait. There are all these contingency plans which would really deter someone from going through the process. I mean, there are enough deterrents and challenges as it is, but to have those kind of
disability
issues.
Yeah, the family court was really very open to making the court accessible to older people and people living with disabilities so that they could get the services they needed out of the court. So that has been a tremendous help to be able to electronically file these court petitions and to have the person sitting at home and holding the hearing via telephone or via some electronic mechanism so that the hearing can be held and they can get their order.
What's going on on the government side of things? Elder abuse was a big topic at the White House Conference on Aging. They talk primarily about financial abuse. But what are the state government, city government, federal government, are they putting any programs in place to support these efforts?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it used to be that elder abuse services in the city budget were in the baseline. And starting last year, at FY15, I think they were baselined for the first time. And we just were approved for contracts for substantial increases in money so that we could have more workers, more services. So the city council is very supportive of this. And then you have the mayor's office on combating domestic violence.
I will say the city of New York is ahead of the curve on this. The federal government, and I know it was a large part of the conference, but they have not put the dollars in. There's a domestic violence pot, and if you look at that domestic violence pot, there is the narrowest of piece in that pie for elder abuse. So I think that it's the states who have said, we have a tremendous issue here and we have to step in because the federal government is not stepping in. And New York City should be applauded for what they've done over the last, 5 years with regard to really saying we have to fund this.
And New York State also has been.
And New York State is better, yeah.
But you could always use more.
I think that as we started out when there was no funding, and this study showed there was a tremendous need, and as we've gone on, more people have come forward to say, yes, I need help. And that's all a result of having agencies that have been funded so that they can go out and train and reach out and provide service. So yes, if you have the money and the dollars and the service, the people are there. We know they're there. We know they're more there. We know there's more to do.
How many people do you deal with in a given year in the program?
It's about 700. Yeah. We have carryover from the year before, then we have new clients, some of it is consultation.
But any given year, we're doing 700.
It's about 720 something.
And if you had the money and the staff, you could be doing a lot more.
Well, we're expected now to do more because of this increase in funding. So, we're able to reach a much wider swath of people at this point. So, hopefully, we'll be able to
the more social workers and lawyers we had, the more cases. So every time we've expanded our staff, the more cases we've taken in. So, I think that to the extent that there's funders or the government or whoever is supporting these programs, we'll be able to do more. If you suspect any kind of elder abuse, just call 311, say JASA, and it'll get to us.
Anything else about elder abuse that you'd like the audience to know?
Just again, it can be so subtle. And sometimes if you have a gut feeling that something's not right, there's a good chance. And it happens to rich people. It happens to people of low incomes, men and women. It's sometimes you wouldn't even assume that someone who you know may in some ways be exploited. And it's just so pervasive.
Martha Pollack and Donna Dougherty from JASA. Thank you.
Thank you.